Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. HR Florida State Council, affiliate of the Society of Human Resource Management, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 16,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council. More at hrflorida.org. And from Floridians for Lawsuit Reform. Florida accounts for 8% of U.S. property insurance claims, but 76% of the country's property insurance lawsuits, forcing higher premiums on Florida's families. Learn about solutions at fltortreform.com. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
Violent protests in Florida are now even more against the law than they used to be.
Pay attention. We've got new law, and we're going to use it if you make us.
Also tonight, even before Governor DeSantis signed the protest bill, just the threat of it was giving this demonstrator in St. Petersburg pause.
If the governor would have signed it tonight, I probably wouldn't have came out.
We'll also learn what House and Senate budget negotiators were able to hammer out during a weekend of talks and hear about a move to abolish the legacy of a popular former Florida governor. I'm Tom Flanagan. We start the next to last week in this year's Florida lawmaking session, and this is Capitol Report. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has approved a bill he says will curb violence and property damage during protests. It's a response to last summer's protests following the death of George Floyd and calls to defund the police. Some of those protests became violent. Lynn Hatter reports DeSantis signed off on the measure today at a news conference in Polk County, the same place where he first introduced the proposal 7 months ago.
All right, it's done. We promise and we deliver.
DeSantis was flanked by local law enforcement, House Speaker Chris Sprawls, and Senate President Wilton Simpson, the same group who stood by him in September when he introduced his public disorder bill.
We had a bold vision. We worked with President Wilton Simpson and Speaker Chris Sprawls to get it done. They were able to successfully do it, and so we're here today being prepared now to sign that bill into law.
The now law creates new crimes such as mob intimidation, cyber intimidation, and defacing monuments. It increases penalties for crimes that happen during protests, like attacks on police and property. It also creates civil fines for blocking roadways and sets up a process to challenge local government decisions that result in decreased funding for local law enforcement. Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd held up two pictures, one, a crowd of people marching down a street.
I want to make sure everybody knows this is a peaceful protest. We encourage it. It's the foundation of our country. And we want people to peacefully protest when they feel the need.
The other showing a person in silhouette standing in front of a fire.
This is a riot. And this will get you locked up before quick in the state of Florida. Pay attention. We've got new law. And we're going to use it if you make us.
Judd says law enforcement can tell the difference between a peaceful protest and a riot, where Governor DeSantis sees, quote, unprecedented disorder and violence and mob activity. Democratic Representative Fentress Driscoll sees potential First Amendment problems and confusion arising from the new law.
You know, this language is very fuzzy. And in fact, from committee stop, we would sometimes get different answers from the bill sponsor. When we would ask questions about mob intimidation and what does that mean, an aggravated riot, what does that mean if you have people who are protesting peacefully and then you have maybe some, people start engaging in wrongdoing at the same event, at the same protest, you know, how are our law enforcement officers supposed to handle that? Because the language in HB 1, frankly, leaves it quite open to interpretation.
Florida Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Freed calls the law an effort to suppress dissenting voices.
And when law enforcement has complete discretion, as you saw on the insurrection at the Capitol, you see how laws can be applied differently depending on your background and depending on the color of your skin. And that is my greatest fear here.
The signing of HB 1 comes as lawmakers are considering another proposal that would introduce police reforms, like requiring officers to disclose whether they've been the subject of investigations. Both are responses to the summer's social justice movements. I'm Len Hatter.
With the specter of Florida's HB 1 anti-riot bill looming, protesters in St. Petersburg were back on the streets Friday to demand justice for Duarte Wright, the 20-year-old black man killed by police in a Minneapolis suburb, along with others. Protesters didn't know if the bill's new restrictions on protesting would go into effect as they marched or what it could do for them, as we hear from WMNF's Daniel Figueroa IV.
The protest was peaceful, but it was not silent.
Show me what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks like.
Show me what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks like.
More than 100 people gathered on the steps of St. Pete's City Hall around 7 p.m. Most wore black, both to mourn and to stand in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement. Protests in St. Pete and across the world began last year after video of George Floyd's death at the hands of Minneapolis police was seen across the world. As the world awaited a verdict in the trial for Floyd's accused killer, one is expected to come this week, protesters added more names to the ever-growing list of black Americans killed by police. Only a few miles from where the trial is taking place, Wright was shot and killed by an officer who claimed she mistook her gun for a taser. Wright was not armed. There is also Adam Toledo, the 13-year-old boy killed by police in Chicago. Police said he had a gun, but body cam footage appears to show the officer shoot Adam as both hands were raised in the air. Both hands appear to be empty. Before the march, participants spoke. HB 1 was at the forefront of everyone's mind. Here's Jaleesa Blackshear of Tripartisan Canvas.
If you want to condone violence or you want escalation, please do not march with us. I will personally ask you to leave, and I'm going to take your picture, and I'm going to call you out just like I do these guys. Because we didn't come here for that. We came here to be in solidarity, and we want justice. No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!
HB 1, Governor Ron DeSantis' top legislative priority this year, has been accused of having a chilling effect on First Amendment freedoms. Among many aspects seen as problematic, HB 1 can make even the most peaceful protesters culpable for felonious crimes if authorities decide a protest turns to a riot. It also loosens the definition of a riot and creates the mob intimidation crime. Under that section, any two or more people attempting to coerce someone to assume, abandon, or maintain a particular viewpoint against his or her will can be charged with a misdemeanor. And it offers immunity to drivers who might injure or kill marching protesters in intersections.
If the governor would have signed it tonight, I probably wouldn't have came out as far as in the street. I would have rallied, had the vigil, but I wouldn't have felt comfortable and being responsible for leading people to get felonies.
HB 1 passed both chambers of Florida's legislature before the march and will go into effect immediately upon receiving the governor's signature. Blackshear said Friday's march might be her last. She'll still be pushing for equality and policy changes, but through other avenues, like lobbying local officials. Many, though, were unmoved in their convictions. Ashley Green is an organizer with Tampa Bay Dream Defenders. She said her parents fought for civil rights 50 years ago. She can't believe she still has to. Green said HB 1 is frightening, especially since it could silence dissent by convicting dissenting voices with felonies, stripping them of the right to vote. But she'll still be in the streets.
My ancestors risked their lives, and I'm willing to risk my own. I just don't want to die for something. I want to live for it. I want to live for freedom. And it's so disgusting to hear people co-opt the term liberty and freedom while they are actively trying to suppress it.
For nearly 3 hours, they marched, at first in silence, sticking to sidewalks. They made their way down 2nd Avenue North and down Beach Drive, then around the Museum of Fine Arts and west across Central Avenue, heading back to City Hall once they reached 16th Street. As they passed shops and restaurants, business owners and patrons offered words of encouragement, with many raising fists up in solidarity. Passing Enigma, a bar in the Edge District, the crowd outside erupted in cheers. There was no confrontation and no violence. Once back at City Hall, Ruth Beltran, a Black-identifying Dominican woman from Bradenton, spoke about her son. He turns 20 next month, the same age as Wright. She marched for him Friday, for the other mothers terrified whenever their sons and daughters leave home. She marched, hoping for a day when she didn't have to wonder if a traffic stop would rob her of her son. Talking about it, she couldn't hold back the tears.
Our kids deserve a better world. Our kids deserve an opportunity to grow old, to grow past 20, past 40, and to just age and live a regular life without having to be in fear that they'll be killed, that their friends and families that will be killed for any reason, you know? Oh my goodness, it's so real.
I'm Daniel Figueroa IV in St. Petersburg.
With honey, with milk, and with warm things, you'll get it back like Christmas presents.
Florida lawmakers met this past weekend to begin ironing out the differences between the House and Senate budgets. Regan McCarthy reports budget leaders came closer on at least one remaining difference in the health care budget. House Speaker Chris Sprouse has thrown his weight behind a move to give new mothers Medicaid coverage for a year after they give birth. The initiative wasn't included in an initial Senate budget proposal, but during the weekend budget conference, the Senate offered to meet the House halfway by extending coverage for new mothers from the current 2 months to 6 months.
Senate Healthcare Appropriations Chair Aaron Bean says as of Saturday evening, the House and Senate still stood apart on a number of healthcare budget issues.
Nursing homes, there's major reductions in nursing homes that we don't take, they do. There's major reductions in hospitals. We only cut them a little bit, they have major. And then the postpartum is another issue where they have a 12-month coverage of women after they have their baby. We made an offer to get to 6 months.
But Bean says he's happy to see how the budget negotiations have moved forward so far. And he says he's proud of the Senate's efforts to increase support for new mothers.
We made it a priority. How can we get there? How can we get there? It's a priority of the House. We wanted to make a good faith effort. And so we went from zero to six, which meets them halfway. And that's a good faith, really proud of that.
The initiative is a priority of House Speaker Chris Sprouse, who wants to extend Medicaid coverage for mothers after giving birth from the current 2 months to a year.
The Florida House is making a meaningful commitment to address the disparities in health outcomes for our children and for their moms. We believe that providing access to postnatal coverage for up to 1 year after the birth can significantly boost health outcomes for moms and their babies. And we know that healthy moms are better positioned to raise healthy and thriving children.
Sprouse announced plans earlier this session to increase Medicaid spending for new mothers. Medicaid is a federal and state-funded program that helps provide health care for low-income people. Sprouse credits a COE Democratic representative, Camilla Brown, with championing the efforts to better support new mothers. Brown says mothers shouldn't be dying following childbirth.
By investing greater resources in the budget for this program, we are really providing life-saving support for new mothers in need. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention estimate that 60% of maternal deaths here in the U.S. are actually preventable. And to be perfectly clear, extending this coverage will save lives.
Andrea Friel is the chief medical officer and OBGYN at Tallahassee Memorial Healthcare. She says in Florida, 50% of all pregnancy-related deaths occur after mothers are discharged from giving birth. Friel says many of those deaths could have been prevented if mothers had received appropriate follow-up care and monitoring. She says many pregnancy-related deaths stem from treatable concerns,
such as overdose, suicide, hypertension, diabetes.
And Brown says minority and low-income mothers, who are more likely to depend on Medicaid for health care, are facing the greatest impacts.
As we previously heard, this problem impacts minority communities disproportionately. Disparities in maternal health equality results of mothers of color in Florida being 3 to 4 times more likely to die from pregnancy-related causes than white mothers.
Experts say giving mothers more care following childbirth will help ensure fewer mothers die. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Local governments wouldn't be able to ban or restrict the types of fuels utilities use to power customers' homes and businesses under a bill that has cleared its last House committee stop. Those powers would be preempted to the state. Robbie Gaffney reports elected officials are joining environmentalists in opposing the measure.
Auburndale Republican Representative Josie Tomko is sponsoring the House bill. She wants to prevent local governments from banning natural gas as a fuel utilities can use to power buildings. Tomko points to Pinellas, Miami, and Tampa as areas that attempted to ban natural gas.
And I know for me, who's someone who uses dual source of energy at my home, we have a cross between solar and natural gas that is very problematic.
David Cullen with Sierra Club Florida says local governments that want to eventually get to 100% renewable energy won't be able to if Tomko's bill is signed into law.
We can't get to 100% renewable without cutting back and eventually stopping the use of fossil fuels, including natural gas, propane, butane, and the like.
Dunedin Mayor Julie Ward-Bujolski is one of 27 elected officials from across Florida who signed a letter calling on Florida Senate President Wilton Simpson and House Speaker Chris Sprouls to oppose Tomko's bill. She says while the bill doesn't specifically target local governments' clean energy plans, it's a first step.
Legislation like this that passes tends to breed more legislation. And what I'd rather see the state do is, you know, comprehensive legislation for the entire state to do some of the things that we're trying to do. But what they're talking about is restricting of what we can't do. And, you know, I think their approach isn't in the best interest of local government.
Bujolski says her community is environmentally conscious and says the city is considering plans to be powered by 100% clean energy.
All of those things are very important to us. You know, any kind of restriction on what we can do at home, we're not going to like.
Tallahassee City Commissioner Jack Porter also signed the letter asking legislative leadership to oppose the bill. She says the bill will undo Tallahassee's commitments to transfer to renewable energy.
They will eliminate the rights of our local governments to determine all kinds of things about our energy efficiency, our buildings, how we power our city.
Porter says the House and Senate bills will have far-reaching and unintended consequences, which is another reason why environmentalists like Florida Conservation Voters Jonathan Weber oppose the measure. It bans local governments from taking any action that restricts or has the effect of restricting the fuel types utilities use.
It's difficult to predict exactly how far this legislation will go. It could encompass everything from local gas taxes to local sulfur dioxide emissions standards to even local zoning. We don't really know, but rest assured, attorneys will find out the extent of this legislation for us.
But Tomko says her bill isn't meant to overturn local governments' clean energy plans.
This legislation does not prevent cities or utilities from implementing clean energy plans or advocating for increasing clean energy. Cities can and should continue to support clean energy, and this bill is needed to ensure cities cannot mandate the type of clean energy or mandate elimination of one type of energy source.
Tomko's proposal gained the support from other Republican lawmakers, like Valrico Republican Representative Mike Beltran. He says if people want to diversify away from natural gas, they can still do that.
We're not limiting folks to natural gas. We're just saying that the municipalities can regulate them. If everyone wanted to go away from natural gas, then presumably they would have done that already. But in fact, there are many people who prefer to use natural gas for whatever purpose they decide to use it for.
The Senate companion to Tomko's bill is heading to its last committee stop this week. I'm Robbie Gaffney.
Florida's Democratic lawmakers are speaking out against some of the most controversial proposals that have come out of this year's state legislative session. We already heard about Governor DeSantis signing a bill into law that aims to crack down on violent demonstrations, which opponents have criticized as being anti-democratic. Democrats are also taking issue with a recent bill to ban transgender athletes from women and girls sports teams, along with changes to the state's elections laws. As Valerie Crowder reports, Democrats describe the GOP state legislative priorities as unnecessary and problematic.
Democratic State Representative Evan Jenny has spent a decade and a half in the legislature. Jenny says much like previous legislative sessions, lawmakers from across the aisle have found common ground and have remained divided on certain issues.
There are going to be days where we fight like cats and dogs, and there's going to be days where we pat each other on the back and say, hey, good work there. We really tried to do that. Another bill where we just could not come to grips with and could not come to terms with was when it came to the trans athlete bill. That was a bill that we were just not going to see eye to eye on. So there's always going to be moments where we can kind of hold each other up and say, hey, this is good. We worked together on this. But there are always going to be those divisive moments.
Jenny says the problem, however, is that Republicans have prioritized issues this session that have been some of the most divisive.
We file bills to whip up and get our bases into a frenzy. The problem is ours would actually help a situation when we do that. Theirs do not.
Some of those priorities include changes to the state's elections laws, including requiring voters to request absentee ballots more frequently and stricter rules governing ballot box security. Democratic lawmakers have argued those efforts only serve to restrict access to the polls. They're also calling for corporations to consider banding together to oppose a proposal to ban transgender athletes from competing in women's and girls' sports teams. The measures have drawn criticism from outside the state, including from the National Collegiate Athletic Association. Jenny says while boycotting isn't desirable for the state's businesses, it's understandable that measures could make major corporations think twice before moving to the state.
Those corporations have the ability to step up. They have the voice. And they've done the right thing when they've talked about how this is going to impact the state. I think I can speak for everybody when I say, we don't want boycotts. We want you to use your voices. We don't want to hurt Florida businesses because of a few legislative leaders that have made a horrible decision. It's not right to punish 22 million people for that. But unfortunately, that's what these actions that we've seen taken by the legislature may ultimately do.
State Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried joined the House Democratic Caucus during the press call. Many speculate she'll toss her hat into next year's gubernatorial race, but she hasn't yet declared her candidacy.
If you see more people from the Democratic Party and Independent Party running for governor, it's because we do not believe that the direction of our state is in the right way and that we need a reversal of actions and that the system that has been broken.
Democratic state lawmakers also discussed redistricting efforts. Fried explained with Republicans controlling the state executive and legislative branches, Democrats won't have as much power over how the state's congressional and legislative district maps are drawn.
This is going to be a difficult process. We know that we don't have the votes to stop a redistricting plan. Unfortunately, that the courts have shifted significantly in the last 10 years. And so it will be difficult. So the things that we have is we have the backing of the people, the backing of the people who put this into our Constitution to have fair districts.
The task of redrawing the state's electoral maps isn't the focus at this moment. States won't receive the 2020 U.S. Census data until the end of September. Now, Democrats in the state legislature are working with their Republican colleagues on next year's budget and pushing back against controversial bills affecting voters and transgender people. I'm Valerie Crowder.
Gina Jordan looks to the future.
Here's some of what's happening tomorrow in the Florida legislature. The House will take up dozens of issues during a floor session, including an overhaul of the state's alimony laws and a proposal to identify and help students with reading deficiencies. A proposed revamp of the state's school voucher programs would expand eligibility for vouchers and consolidate current offerings, while a proposed constitutional amendment seeks to impose 8-year term limits on county school board members. The Senate Rules Committee will hear one of many bills relating to home rule authority. This one has to do with home-based businesses. It says local governments may not enforce any policy or take any action to license or otherwise regulate a home-based business in a way that's different from other businesses. The committee is slated to take up numerous high-profile issues, including a bill that would add a series of restrictions to voting by mail. Other bills on the agenda include a ban on transgender females participating in girls' and women's high school and college sports, and a proposal targeting local regulation of vacation rental properties. And finally, the old Capitol is bathed in purple light to mark National Crime Victims' Rights Week. The victims' rights group Mercy's Law for Florida is lighting landmarks purple. That's some of what's happening at the Capitol. I'm Gina Jordan.
You're listening to Capital Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, in the final days of this legislative session, hard-fought battles over money are common as that budget deal starts falling into place. But as Steve Bosquet reports, this fight is very different and involves the legacy of a popular former governor.
Lawton Childs was governor in the 1990s when Florida took on the tobacco industry and won.
I'm proud to announce that Florida's victory today truly is a win for all of our people. Most of all, it's a victory for our children and their future. The victory is the straw that broke Joe Camel's back.
That was Childs more than two decades ago. One part of that historic tobacco settlement was creation of the Lawton Childs Endowment, a special fund to pay for health programs for children and the elderly and for medical research on the effects of smoking. The money comes not from taxes, but from the tobacco industry itself. Now the legislature is talking about abolishing and liquidating the Childs Endowment. Representative Jay Trumbull chairs the House Appropriations Committee.
This action will ensure the funds are truly used as a reserve and help as a savings account rather than an investment portfolio.
About $1 billion sits in the Childs Endowment today, much of it investment income. Florida's last Democratic governor, who died in 1998, is only a fuzzy memory to many of today's legislators, if they ever knew him at all, and that is a source of frustration to older Democratic lawmakers.
I don't like this idea.
Representative Joe Geller of Aventura wants the Childs Endowment to continue.
The Lawton Childs Trust Fund was a singular step forward in the history not only of the state of Florida, but of the United States. People forget just the problems that smoking alone used to cost this state, both in terms of money and lives. I don't think that problem has gone away.
The House easily passed the bill to abolish the endowment by a vote of 75 to 42, but it's a different story in the Senate, where a bill would keep the fund alive and divert unspent money to a heart institute at the University of South Florida Medical School in Tampa. The bill's sponsor is Republican Senator Joe Gruters of Sarasota.
But if anything was left unspent, rather than going back to general revenue, what we would do is transfer it over to the USF Health so they could specifically focus on heart research.
Gruters is a USF graduate, and he said the Childs Endowment is a worthwhile program, and he would not vote to abolish it. I'm Steve Bosquet.
Our regular Capital Report correspondents are Valerie Crowder, Robbie Gaffney, Blaise Ganey, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, and Regan McCarthy. Thanks also to Daniel Figueroa IV and Steve Bosquet. Technical assistance for Capital Report comes from Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Please join us every evening at this time throughout the 2021 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Capital Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capital Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. HR Florida State Council, affiliate of the Society of Human Resource Management, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 16,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council. More at hrflorida.org. And from Floridians for Lawsuit Reform. Florida accounts for 8% of U.S. property insurance claims, but 76% of the country's property insurance lawsuits, forcing higher premiums on Florida's families. Learn about solutions at fltortreform.com.